Hello, everybody. Welcome to a French Village podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, and you are not going to believe this. But as our Christmas present to you from me and Ben, you may have heard that a couple weeks ago, we were invited to sit down with members of the cast of The French Village, as well as the producer. We have two episodes that we're going to release that are conversations. This is the first of those two with Emmanuel Dossé, who is the producer and showrunner on The French Village. I gotta say, it was the craziest thing when the French embassy reached out to us. They are giving the show an award, and they've brought some of the producers and the actors to town, to DC, to receive the award at the French embassy. And they came and said hi. And so I want you to listen to the first of the two. This is our conversation with Emmanuel Dossé. And we will be releasing our second episode with Marie Kramer, who played Lucienne, and Constance Dahl, who played Suzanne, in a second episode. I hope you enjoy it.
So thanks for joining us. I want to start by just asking you about the genesis of the show and where the idea for a show that did what you tried to do here, depict this kind of historical detail about an episode this painful.
That's how do you get an idea? That's a long story, so I'll try to make it short. I was a student in a film school at La Fémicité State Film School, and I saw the HBO shows. It was beginning of 2000.
What's your favorite HBO show?
Sopranos, probably.
It's a great choice.
And suddenly I realized I wanted to do TV series. Something that could be popular and political. Whereas if you want to be really popular in French cinema, you do a comedy with a famous actor. Or in the US, you do someone with a cape and leggings.
A real indictment of America right there.
So you did Danielle Larchet. It was neither.
No. I was thinking, yes, I'd like to become a TV producer doing series d'auteur, like you've got cinema d'auteur. I wanted to do series d'auteur, having someone who's got a strong point of view and also is a trained screenwriter, whereas in cinema d'auteur is a good director that is also an author. I wanted to do the same thing, not inventing anything, just copying The Sopranos, copying HBO shows. And I was thinking, well, all these HBO shows are feature film genre that are made into TV series. Sopranos is a mafia. That is, what is the mafia in The Sopranos? That is the real life of mafia. So he's a big guy depressed in New Jersey. What is Western? This is Deadwood. This is not the legend you print. This is a reality. What is the peplum? That is Rome. So if I want to do a show in France copying The Sopranos, I should think the same way, but I'm not doing what HBO does with much more talent and much more money. So I have to think about a genre that is really specific to France. And this is the occupation. You see, I was thinking as a producer, talking about business in a way and not talking about, of course, this period, the German occupation was very important for me as all the French of my generation, because our parents, our grandparents keep talking about it. My grandmother during my childhood she never talked about something that occurred after 1945 because she lost her mother at that time during the war, and she was blocked. And so she was repeating all the time. I was fed up with this. And like most of the French were living in the German occupation still in their mind in a way. But my thinking as a producer was more thinking the kind of genre. This is really specific to France, the occupation, German occupation film. This is La Grande Vadrouille. This is Monsieur Klein. There are many very popular. And when I wrote the first pitch document, that we sent to France Télévisions. It was starting by all the films under the that deals with the occupation worked on the screen. It always worked. So that was the beginning of the idea. And I wanted to do a show that lasts many seasons so that you can, and série d'auteur, so that you can deal with everyday life and you can have much more subtle way of seeing what happened at that time. Like in my mind, it was like living in a nightmare. Suddenly the fascists take the power. What do you do? And I started working in a TV company that was doing not very good TV series, but very popular TV series. And I had the chance to read Frédéric Krivine. At that time, I was reading lots of scripts. And when I read a script from Frédéric, I thought, okay, this is the person I would love to meet and love to work with. And perchance I heard that he was not an historian, but he knew very well the Second World War, that he was very fond of it. And I was thinking of changing of company, moving to another production company. And when I met the who is now my associate, I told him, I'd be really happy to meet you and to work with you if I can do a show that would be called Un Village Français, that would be written by Frédéric Krivine, that I never met yet. And he should be a showrunner of the show. He should be a co-producer. At that time, no French company were proposing this kind of deals with writers because they didn't have, and it's still true in France, lots of, we really love cinema, it's very important. So as Godard say, when you watch TV, you're not looking up, you're looking down. It's not very important. And the thinking, doing a série d'auteur, it's pretty unusual in a way. Starting better, thanks also to the HBO show, so again. And so this started that way. And I say, can you introduce me to Frédéric? So he introduced me to Frédéric. And Frédéric was immediately saying, well, that could really interest me. I don't have time. I really don't have time. But maybe one day I could be interested in that. So what you could do is write the pitch document and then we'll talk about it. So I started doing research, reading a lot, reading Paxton, reading Jean-Pierre Azéma, and starting writing the pitch document, discussing with Frédéric Krivine, sent it to France Télévisions, written by me, very small, and consultant Frédéric Krivine, very big. and we sold the show. So I could come back to Frédéric and tell him, well, now we've got money. Do you want to write this show and do you want to co-produce it? And then he said yes and started writing. And we kept the idea of Un Village Français, obviously. We kept the whole DNA of the show, but he rewrote. That was good. That was a good thing for the real older characters, older. That's what I never wanted to be a screenwriter. I have too much respect for that.
So it didn't have anything to do with the current political moment? Because I think one of the reasons it spoke to us, and that I think maybe one of the reasons it's so popular in the United States, is that we're going through a very specific political moment with Donald Trump and... I think we've always looked at the show as a bit of a, it's not the same, but it's a meditation on complicity to some degree, right? How do people evaluate how they behave in this extreme circumstance? And we've seen a lot of that going on in the United States as people decide how to engage with Donald Trump, many of whom have completely sort of betrayed their values, things they know to be right, in order to support him. And so that's one of the reasons I think the show, I don't think we would have made a podcast about just any show. Part of it is because we're both very interested in politics. We're engaged in politics in the United States, and the show spoke to us on that level. And I guess I'm surprised to hear that the politics of the moment, potentially in France, in the United States, although we would have, because when did you start making it? It was
2004. So in a way, my main goal as a producer, and I'm pretty sure Frédéric would answer the same. They were entertainers. We want to have an audience that feels captivated. And for me, from the beginning, was my interest in the show has lots to do with, let's say, the humanity, the complexity of humanity. That was, And also, it's a nightmare when the fascists take power and what happens. And at that time in France, 2002, Jean-Marie Le Pen was in the deuxième tour of the presidential election, which was a shock because last time we had an extreme right government in France was during Vichy. And for a long time, it was such a shame that they were kept really quiet. And starting in 2002, less quiet and less quiet. And now today, as you know, there are presidential elections and we have got characters. We have got a Zemmour, which is kind of a Trump today in France. Right? And I hope he won't be a president, but I'm sure in 2016, you never believed Trump could be a president. So I can't even imagine Zemmour can be a president, but... What's happened with this show is I think it's an universal. We all have a feeling some people live in a country that have a dictator at the head of the countries, but we all fear from that, and we all feel that it could happen again, and you don't have to do Handmaid's Tale. You just have to watch what happened in the 40s, and you understand what it's all about. It's very strange that fourth season, we talk about all the French people who just didn't care at all about what was happening to the Jews. But something really, what we understand from the diaries of French citizens, Jean-Pierre Azemar brought us this story, this vision of historian, that the French were shocked by children being separated from their families. With entire families being deported, the Germans didn't want the children to be with their parents because it was too many problems to deal with. So they asked the French police to separate. And that was something that was disturbing for the French. And Trump did that. So the echo of during all that time when I was doing Un Village Français, I could see the echo with the world, with the rise of extremism. Yes, of course.
I mean, one of the interesting things about the show, time-wise, is that it straddles the period of Trump's rise so that, you know, it starts out, it's what the first episodes were run in 2013, right?
The first episode, no, shot in 2008 and broadcasted in 2009, something.
And when was the end of the, when were you filming and writing the end of the show?
2017.
Yeah, so it ends after the very sort of deep awareness that a Le Pen figure, Trump is complicated, a little bit not like Le Pen in some ways, but very much in the same mold. Did that make it feel more immediate that this was happening in Poland, happening in Hungary, happening in the United States, that Le Pen had come reasonably close to?
Again, shame Frederick can be there, but I don't think it's like Frederick comes from a family that is really political. His family is a well-known far left. Alain Krivine was one of the leader of Mai 68. So he's been really living, his education was really political. Frédéric Levin is not a far left. He's kind of a misfit in his family of extreme left. But we had this in mind. We knew doing a show being watched by millions of people in France and hopefully in the whole world, is political. When you're doing a Village Français that deals with the German occupation, it is talking about the extreme right. And again, in France, 2002 is a big shock. And we say, it's possible, it's coming back again. It's not possible. We can't even imagine it. So we were always living in this, but we don't want to feel, I don't know how I should have put it. We don't want to sound too... we are not that important. We're not changing the world. We are not. We are just doing a TV show. You know.
Were you surprised? Was it because it was a big hit in France?
Yes, it was a big hit.
It was a big hit. When were you surprised that it was so popular?
No, because I was very young. and was very arrogant. And I was saying, okay, all the shows on occupation will work. This was the first line of my pitch document. No, I was very happy because I knew when the first season worked very well. It was on that night, it was number one in France and was repraised by the critics. And I thought, for once, it looked like a show, me, myself, as a viewer, I would have watched. And as a producer, I keep doing this, at least trying to do shows I would watch. And I was very happy because I knew it won't be a miniseries. Because if it didn't work the first season, the first episode, that would have been another miniseries dealing with what happened in 1940, and that's it. At that time, I knew I had the chance to work with Frédéric Rivine and Philippe Tribois for probably many years, because that's what happened on TV. First, you have to fight with a broadcaster and try to defend your point of view, but they pay, so you're not really at ease. And when you've got good ratings, the power is in your hand. You just have to use it carefully and responsibly.
Here's the thing I've been dying to know. How big is Villeneuve supposed to be?
Villeneuve, it's keep changing for the need of the fiction. First, I called it un village français because un village, you know, it's so French. There was this very famous François Mitterrand for the second presidential 1988 ad with it was La Force Tranquille. You could see François Mitterrand, there was a village at the back. And that was what I had in my mind. On the first posters of Un Village Français, it's all our characters, and there's the small village with the church. So that was the idea. When we started doing research, what happened in a village, in a French village at that time? Nothing. 40-something happens, one dead, 44, another dead, that's it. So we're not going to call it une ville française. That doesn't sound good. That's, nobody understands really. A village, that sounds good. And so it's a village. No, everybody knows each other. And suddenly it's a small town. Would be a town of 20,000 person around.
20,000?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good size. Because when you're watching the show, there's this element of sometimes people obviously know each other. Yeah. And other times it's like, oh, I've never seen this person before in my life. And we were constantly trying to talk on the podcast to figure out how big do you think this town is? Because it's big enough to be cut in half by this bridge. 20,000 sounds about right.
The way you watch it and on your podcast is really, really interesting to me. And I thought it's a tremendous work you're doing this podcast. And sometimes you analyze it really precisely, really historically. You're very precise. Well, we are not as precise. It's not because we don't care. It's just that we are doing fiction. And some even evolution of the characters, we think it's good for the story. It's not good if you go and see a psychiatrist and you tell him, is it the right person? No, he won't validate it. We know it, but we think it's good for the story, so we do it.
And yet, the amount of historical research in the writing of that show is extraordinary. And I would find that I would watch the episodes and then I would go through history books looking for the source material. And of course, I don't read French. So, you know, I'm looking at English language histories of the occupation. And I would find even for very small events, the historical event on which the material is based. Who did that research? And I mean, it felt to me like you had a team of historians working on the scripts.
No, there wasn't a team of historians. There was a writing room with every writers in the room were reading lots concerning each season. And there was Frédéric. Frédéric knew very well the period and is a really hard worker. When he's digging into a subject, he's digging deeply. And we were working with Jean-Pierre Azema, who was a historical consultant. Jean-Pierre is not only a medal, say, oh, Jean-Pierre Azema approved it, okay, that's good. Jean-Pierre Azema was really working on the show. Each season was decided during powwows. I never assisted in between Frédéric and Jean-Pierre saying, okay, what we do this season. This is kind of a negotiation, very interesting negotiation between a screenwriter and an historian. how they meet together and share the same vision, because they all have their own vision and they had to agree on it, because it was very important for Jean-Pierre that is, if his name is associated to Un Village Français, that is really accurate. So there were negotiations about many small aspects that Jean-Pierre was saying, okay, we don't care about that. It's not very important. This is not a betrayal of history, the famous example, because we say it a lot in interviews. And we had problem with the broadcaster who was saying it's not possible that Lucienne, interpreted by Marie, who is there, gets her kids out of the school in the first episode. It's not possible. It's because she wouldn't do that because Germans are coming, and she wouldn't do that because no French teacher was ever doing this in the 40s. This is an idea of the 60s, 70s, doing this with your school. You don't take this kind of... This is not the way you educate kids at that time. But we thought it was interesting for the drama, and we wanted to have kids killed, and it was easier for us to get them killed in a field than in the school, because that means bombing the school, and I don't have the money to bomb the school. So this is a discussion with Jean-Pierre. He say, who cares? Really, who cares? Broadcaster cares, because he say it's no good. In fact, the broadcaster uses the history to say, I don't want this scene to happen because I don't think this scene is good for the audience, because what is doing Lucienne when the kids are killed, she does nothing. And that's something that's unbearable for most of broadcasters. A hero has to do something. And this is something very particular about Un Village Français. And it was very popular, but strangely popular, because what can Daniel Larcher do about all this? Nothing. He's totally powerless. And that is a pretty real way of seeing things. We are quite often powerless. And I think during the years you lived through the Trump administration, you must have felt this quite often. But this is not something you want to tell in a story, usually. Usually the hero wins at the end and manages to save the world.
So do you feel like there's no heroes in your story?
There are heroes. There are small heroes, but ambiguous heroes. To me, the hero that is most clearer is probably Suzanne. The character of Suzanne is the one who is... I feel the closest, because she's pure in a way,
yeah.
But pure, normal pure. The character of Marie, Marie Germain, is a strange hero, and she wants to die in a way. The way she's killed, I mean, that's what she wants. So this is a heroic character, but I don't feel close to her.
Sarah feels close to her.
I do feel close to her. I love Marie. I want to talk about some of the choices you made in the show. Well, you just said that Marie, you feel like she wants to die in that moment. It's interesting. I always felt that moment was more about Marchetti and making sure that there was no ambiguity in what a bad guy he was, and making sure that he was going to be punished both by the audience and by the show. But you say, you're right, because we debated that scene because it was devastating. It was very hard to lose Marie. But you're saying it was part of her, she wanted to die. Tell me why.
What I love about the writing of Frédéric Rivine is that you can relate to the characters very strongly. They feel very human, but they are not that clear. There is always, and this is good definition of humanity, I think there's something, always a kind of mystery. And we don't want to say, she wants to die, she wants to die. We were thinking in the editing room, because there is writing, there is what the actors and actress give us in the shooting and do with the directors, and then there's editing. And this is during editing we finally discuss all of this. And yes, the way we edited the show was saying, in a way, she wants to die. In a way, she did all this, and she can't imagine. She doesn't want to live a life after the war. It's something that won't be bearable for her. And she's testing Marchetti to know, are you able to go that far? And unconsciously, I think she wants to die. This is my interpretation, discussing in the editing room. That's what we try to do, but it's not that clear again.
One of the things that I found really interesting about the show and that resonates with a lot of the political activity that Sarah has led in the United States and that I've been involved in is the depiction of the alliance, functional alliance, between the Gaullist conservatives, the democratic socialist forces, and the very non-democratic socialist forces. And we've had an experience over the last 5 years, and, you know, the office that you're sitting in is an expression of that, of a kind of cross-ideological pro-democratic coalition that is people who are maybe quite conservative in orientation like Sarah or quite left-wing who are functionally allied under a kind of protect democracy banner. And one of the interesting things about the show from my point of view is just a depiction of a different moment in history in which that kind of alliance materialized or was necessitated by circumstances. And I'm curious for your thoughts on it, to what extent when you were depicting that, were you, I mean, obviously you're making a television show for entertainment, not a political prescription, but how much were you thinking about things that need to happen in modern times?
I'm not sure I can answer. I totally understand what you're aiming at, but in my point of view, we wanted to get rid of the first of the Gaullist view that it was resistance and it was a country of resistance. Then we wanted to get rid of the view in the 70s that it was a country of collaborators, and try to have a honest view of what happened and saying, yes, what went out of these hard times and that created the society we live in, and which is, I think, French society is it's the model of the society of in France is it's a good model, a model which comes from Le Comité National de la Résistance, and that is very important and something we should protect and we should defend. And probably in France we're forgetting about it today, or the benefits, the strength of this model.
So I want to go back to some of the choices you made on the show, because I have a bunch of questions about how the characters evolved, why you decided to do certain things. I have a lot of opinions about the fact that many of the children disappeared as the story evolved, kids that were introduced at the beginning. Take Hierro, he's there and then he's gone. was that just like, we can't write these kids all the time? And
it was a bit of that, because when you have a kid, you can't shoot more than 4 hours per day. So that makes it very difficult.
And did Suzanne start out having two kids and then ultimately just have one?
yeah, there are a few.
Yeah. That's mostly me telling a joke, because I would focus on it sometimes on the show, like, wait, where did these kids go?
Sometimes we were a bit, we don't know how to do it.
But I want to talk about Lucienne, because we have Marie here, and we're going to get to talk to her. But you said that's so interesting that you started with that scene, because I think the show kicks off with this inexplicable scene where you're introduced to Lucienne and you spend it so frustrated with her. Like, she's a frustrating character on the show because she makes a lot of decisions that seem... You're just like, why are you making that decision? Don't fall in love with the German soldier. Wait, don't murder your husband. Don't fall in love with a priest. Wait, why are you doing all these things? Tell me your vision for the character of Lucienne.
The character of Lucienne is obviously one of the most complex masochist character.
Masochist
character in the show. This is something you had the chance to read a lot of scripts of Frédéric, and this is something that comes back quite often in his character, in his writing. I know that the character of Lucien is a character Frédéric feels very close to, very intimate with. And this was a character that was someone who was really at the heart of the concept, because she has got nothing to do with politics. She's got nothing to do with history, with the big history. She's just living everyday life. And she's keep doing mistakes because she can't think. She can't think what is happening next, which was exactly what we wanted to do in the show. It's not a show with characters knowing that the German, in the end, will go with that the Shoah existed. And it's a show where the German arrive in the first episode, and guess what? In the second episode, they're still there and be there. I don't know when, for how long. And this character, for me, embodies that. She's just not thinking. She doesn't have this this feeling. And it's very, it was very funny for us to say that in the end, the last season, she's the one who survived all of them. And she's the memory of all that. And she's starting to adapting the memory. And she's supposed to be one of the first resistants in Villeneuve. Of course, she did an act of resistance, but... which was pretty much for a love affair.
And one of the other really interesting choices you make is to make Müller one of the most electrifying characters in the show. And I imagine that you had at least some anxiety about doing that, that you put out a show there where the person who... the entire audience cannot take their eyes off every time he's on screen is the SS war criminal. And he's charismatic, he's highly intelligent, he's insightful, he's a sadist. And I'm just curious about your thinking about doing that. I thought it was one of the most interesting choices in the show, and it's an incredible performance. But it must have been a scary decision to make.
It was a scary decision, but... responsible decision. Well, sometimes in the editing room, we just cut where it was too much. We were feeling too close. It was too empathic. It was too good. The actors was too good also. Richard Samuel is a brilliant actor. Yeah. And we were saying, oh, stop. No music. Because
like him too much.
Yeah. People like him too much. But it was very interesting for us to say, okay, let's depict a Nazi. He's a psychopath, obviously. There's no doubt about it. But he's got a human part also. It's too easy to say the evil is far from us. We don't recognize it. It's so different from us. It's interesting in this show, which is about humanity, about the complexity of humanity, about the gray area between good and evil, to have the figure of evil and make it human, still human. And we saw so many Nazis and they're crazy guys, and say there is a part of this kind of Müller character in me, probably.
And what about Hortense? I want to ask actually about later Hortense, but before we get to later Hortense, what was your vision for somebody like Hortense? Why does she love this incredibly evil, sadistic person?
Hortense is, to me, it's a really romantic character in a way. She's Madame Bovary. She's so fed up with this life in this small village with people, with her husband, who is a really nice guy, very responsible. But it's not really fun, is it? You're not laughing every day, and she's just doesn't know what to do with her life, and she's trying to invent her a new life. And this knight coming from Germany is much more fun, and she has fun with him, and she lives an adventure with him. She has a life at last, and that's why I think she behaves the way she behaves.
Just to run into some really fast questions, who do you think is more evil, Hortense or
Janine?
In a way, Janine is someone who is politically, she is a real collaborator. And to me, she's the one I hate. She's the one I should fight. We know that Hortense is crazy. She's not, in my mind, she's not really responsible for her acts. Whereas Janine is truly the kind of collaborator you could find in your, you know, everyday life, the political opponents you can find, yeah.
You don't know that, but you agree with me. That is also my position. We argued about that a lot. I agree with that. Did you always know Hortense was going to be crazy? Because I will tell you, I found maddening the scenes of her later where she's in the mental institution. Because I felt like it did allow her to evade too much responsibility for who she was. Why did you make that choice?
We didn't know she was schizophrenic when starting the show. The psychiatrist would say, okay, it's not coherent what you're doing. She shouldn't be that way. We just felt that she was a good way of expressing what happened to France at that time in the 70s. That a story you haven't been told, a past you don't want to talk about. What does it give you? The France at that time was probably completely crazy, completely schizophrenic, you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I thought it was interesting to do that. And it was also a way, we had a problem, real problem, to entertain people. As soon as the German leave town, this is more or less the end of the show. We knew it. And there is a civil war after, which is very interesting, but after there is no conflict anymore, nothing. And we decided to do the final season. We didn't need to do it. We could have stopped after the sixth season. We didn't need to do seventh season, but we didn't want to say bye-bye to the character that way. And we thought it was very interesting to do a show that deals with history and memory and say, what do you remember of what happened? I thought, to me, in the end, it's probably my favorite season because I thought it was really, but this is more brainy in a way and then less popular probably.
So I'm curious what you're working on now and what do you do after
That was a question. I had time to think about it because I knew the Germans were going to leave, so I had time to. And I was obsessed with, you have to, when you're doing a TV series, you know, if the last season is not very good, and maybe lots of your audience will revalue the whole show. So I was sad, but I was relieved. When we had the last shot we did was Daniel Larcher dying. That was really moving. And it was the second show I produced, En Ville Français. So, you know, the chance of the beginner. Maybe you're... So since then, I produced other shows. One, we are finishing a show with Frédéric Rivine, which is called Sentinelle. It's about the French army that is actually fighting ISIS in Africa. It's kind of a, what are we doing there? Is that colonial? Is French soldiers... some of them are Muslim. What are they? Who are they fighting over there? It's seen from far. It's very easy to say, again, the good and the bad. But when you're fighting over there, it's much more difficult. So this is a show. We are finishing it. We will be aired next year. I'm also doing a show, another period show with a writer who is called Fabien Nury. He is a comic book writer. And he's got a totally different approach of history, but the kind of the same theme in a way. He did a movie about the death of Stalin, shot by Iannucci. And we are doing a show called Paris Police 1900, so I don't have to pitch the show. The first season was during the Dreyfus Affair, lots of anti-Semitism at that time, the craziness of anti-Semitism in France. It's about the dog DNA of France. And the second season in 1905, it's based on true events with historical characters and also a cop show, historical and political show. It's on Canal Plus. It's been aired on BBC4 a month ago. It's pretty good success. I'm very happy with this show. And I also do comedy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You haven't said anything funny yet.
What? No, because I'm not funny.
do you think that it is, so we made a whole podcast, like many, many episodes about your show. Do you think that we're like crazy stalkers, or are you flattered by it? Which
I'm really flattered by it, and really. I know that this show gained the heart a lot of people. We did a lot of screenings all over France, and you could meet a lot of persons that were feeling very close to the show, that felt intimate with the show. I met people saying, okay, look, I've got a baby. Her name is Suzanne. and it was really impressive. And in fact, that's what I wanted to do. When you're a producer of a show, you want it to be popular, of course, but you want it in a way, it's kind of responsibility. I have the chance to be in my place. I'm a rich, educated white man working on TV. So trying to do shows that mean something to people, that helps discussing and having this, working in culture is kind of a responsibility. So it's so great when you feel that at your place, you manage to bring a little bit of discussing, arguing, which is democracy in a way.
Well, it meant a lot to us. So I watched the whole thing twice during a very busy time politically. But because it was because the show really, you know, it's one of those, it does have echoes, and it said so much to me about the moment that we were in. And so I drew a lot from it. And
Sarah persuaded me to watch it after the first time.
I'm the biggest evangelist for your show in America. I tell everybody they have to watch it.
So I wanted to tell you also something that we've been working on with Frédéric since a few months now. We were really sensible about knowing that in the US, people like you loved it and were very interested. And one day, Brian De Palma came to Paris. And in an interview, he said, what are you looking at the moment? Probably because he was in France. He said, I'm looking at Village Français. My wife persuaded me to watch Village Français, and I watched it twice because I really love the show. And so we met Brian De Palma, and now we are trying to work with him with an American studio on a show that is exactly the same DNA of Village Français. It's kind of a format of Village Français, but based in 1861 in Kentucky, which would be a story that deals with black and white, not with the North and the South, not with the gray and the blue, but about black and white. Obviously, you understand, knowing very well what is Un Village Français, how it's difficult to sell, how it's difficult to create, but that's something we are working on at the moment. Frédéric is writing with Brian De Palma, the pilot. We'll try to find some money in the US. Probably it's very difficult because this is the kind of story you don't want to talk about today. It's not possible to talk about it. And you know you have a problem not being able to talk about it. So we'll try to do it. If it's not in the US, we'll try to do it in Europe. Far less money, but we are. I think that's a very interesting show to make. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Nous nous aimions bien tendrement, on me s'aime tous les amants, et puis...